This episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which I was lucky enough to head out to Barcelona and see being unveiled at its launch, and to chat to athletes like Sharon Nakidi, who won the New York Marathon a few years ago, who does all of her easy and steady runs in this pair of shoes. And then we've set Jess from the Running Channel a very specific challenge to train for 12 weeks for her fastest, hopefully ever, 10K, which is also back out in Barcelona.
Yeah, she is loving training in this shoe. And I think it's important as well, because we're so lucky we get to test lots of different shoes, but we do know that some people just want that one pair that will do everything. So Jess has been doing her long runs, interval sessions, and she will be tackling the final 10K in the Under Armour Infinite Elite shoes.
Yeah, big focus on endurance and a brand new foam, which provides extra energy return and looks after you on even your longest runs. So if you want to know more, head to the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Running Channel podcast with me, Andy Badley, my co-host Sarah Hartley, Rick Kelsey over there pushing the buttons, hopefully they're working this week, and a very special guest this week. We're joined by the Running Channel's very own Mo, and that's going to be what we're talking about this episode, isn't it, Sarah?
Yes, we are going to be talking about Mo's recent run where he managed to break 3 hours for a marathon. If you haven't watched the full video on YouTube yet, go and watch that, but we're going to be getting all of the juicy gossip that we can fit into the main YouTube video.
Yeah, let's get stuck in. Welcome, Mo.
Thank you so much. Can't wait.
Before we dive into Mo being great, I have a bone to pick with you, Andy.
Oh, we're starting already. We're less than a minute in.
Yeah, and I am annoyed at you.
You're always annoyed at me. What are you particularly annoyed about me this
time?
Well,
this specific one. You're entering the world of social media. I tagged you in something over the weekend and you ignored it.
He doesn't know how to reply.
Yeah, did you even see that I tagged you in something?
No, I didn't, no.
Oh my God.
There is a knock-on effect, though, Sarah, to all this. There is a big knock-on effect. You tagged him in something.
Yeah.
But the fact all this tagging is happening with Andy, because we are directing people to Andy.
Yeah. On my Instagram, because you desperately want me to post.
But the knock-on effect is that me and you are accumulatively getting more followers.
Not a word.
What did I say?
Accumulatively.
Together. Accumulatively. Oh, for God's sake.
Are you getting more followers?
We're getting them because of the knock-on effect.
Yeah. Hang on, as in Andy's getting more followers or we're getting more followers?
Yeah, so people are now looking up, Googling, who is Andy from the Running Channel?
Yeah.
But then they then find us too.
Yeah, I know.
So there is a knock-on effect. So it's not all one-way traffic.
Anyone that's listening or watching, for extra context, just in case you're new to the Running Channel podcast, Sarah and Rick are dragging me kicking and screaming into the social media age.
Hey, you wanted this.
Well, I'm massively
regretting your diva era.
I'm at RunBadders on Instagram. We're trying to get me to 5,000 followers so that then I'll be forced into posting stuff. We're approaching 2,000, I think. Yeah, definitely over 1,500 in the last week or so.
Mr. Micro Influencer
Rick is
in the corner.
So upset by it. He's trying to pretend on camera now that he's not upset.
What are you on, Rick? What happens when Andy overtakes you?
I'm on 2.5, and it's taken me, 6 years or something to get there? But it's not like
he's fine with it, though.
I've never been bothered. I've never even looked. I never even knew how many followers I had, genuinely, until recently.
Sounds like someone who cares. Yeah. That really does. I don't care. I don't care about the following. I'm fine.
Oh
my gosh.
I'm getting a lot of stick here. Let's steer this away from me and onto you, Sarah. How's your running be going? You're shifting uncomfortably in your chair because you've hurt your back.
Right? Okay, so you know the gym journey I was going on. This is really embarrassing that most of
you. Have you started the gym journey yet? Have you even got on the gym bus yet?
No. So I am neither a member of a gym, nor have I been to the gym in the last 2 weeks. However, I am a member of a bodyweight online thing.
What?
Sorry.
A bodyweight online thing. Training exercise.
Do you want to try that word? Accumulatively.
You know, that really easy word to say.
Did I get it right?
Yeah.
Accumulative.
Yeah, you did it.
Anyway, get back to it.
Right. So I basically need to go to the gym because I got some wardrobes delivered yesterday, and merely moving the wardrobe into my flat, I've put my back out and I feel about 95.
Oh.
And sitting in this
chair.
Welcome to my world. anyone who is listening to this now, you should know that this is incredibly uncomfortable.
Well, they're very comfortable chairs, I think, mate.
They are very comfortable.
They're not
chairs.
When you're like, every movement hurts.
And she's made absolutely zero fuss about this today as well.
Yeah. I couldn't even put my socks on this morning. Brilliant. Okay. Well, what I actually had beef with was the fact that over the weekend I went on a run.
Yeah.
Whilst ill as well, which I would not recommend.
Don't we tell people not to do that?
Yeah, well, so I felt a lot better, and then I went on a run, looked at my heart rate and was like, this is a terrible idea. Yeah. So stopped it early, went super slow. But on that run, I got to a set of traffic lights, as per a previous podcast, if you've listened to it,
yeah,
and paused my watch because it's a long set of traffic lights.
Yeah.
Then, because I was going on an easy run, I was coming back from a bit of illness, I was trying to test the waters. I didn't want to look at the pace, so I wasn't really looking at my watch.
So you didn't start your watch again?
I didn't start my watch again.
Oh, see, you're on my team now. Don't pause your watch.
She then and tagged you, Andy.
Yeah, and I tagged and you and called respond. You out and you didn't respond. Yeah. So I'm going to say that I'm still winning this argument, but I lost a kilometre of my run.
But I'm the one who says don't pause your watch.
Yeah, I
know.
So I
don't know you'd be calling me out for.
But no, I was calling you out saying that you were right.
Oh, tremendous. Well, that's excellent. Let's just stop
tremendous.
There.
Tremendous. Wow. Okay. On to you, Andy. How's your week of running been?
I don't even know what's happening anymore. I've lost the will to live a little bit, but my running's been good. I did the Wings for Life World Run on Sunday.
Nice.
We were down at Battersea Park hosting as a running channel. Rick was the most incredible hype man ever. Anyone that's familiar with Mr. Motivator from the 90s, that's basically what Rick was.
Accumulatively, it was an amazing day.
Okay. We need to have a word about this. Yeah, it was brilliant. We saw so many amazing people. For anyone that doesn't know, it's a run that supports Wings for Life, which is a spinal cord charity backed by Red Bull. They pay for all the operating costs for the charity. So that's a really cool thing that anything that they raise all goes to the research. So there's lots of people there that were running, but also because the notion is you're kind of running for those who can't. But then there were plenty of other people there on crutches or in wheelchairs that were also moving around in order to cover the distance and outrun the catcher car, which starts 30 minutes after you start. Ours was an app run, so it wasn't a real life car chasing us down in Battersea Park. But yeah, just the most amazing positive running experience, which is really cool.
And the catcher car, how it works is Jerry Halliwell. Yes, that Jerry Halliwell.
Jerry Horner now,
yeah, off of the Spice Girls, yeah, is in your ear saying the catcher car is coming and you hear it revving as it gets closer towards you.
I've done it before and there is literally nothing more. I've done it both as the app and then last year I went out to, I think it was Vienna where the like live thing is, and both are equally as terrifying. You would think that one would be more scary than the other, but no, having a car in your ear, terrifying.
And having a real car.
Because also it's not in Vienna, it's not one car. I went out there and I was like, okay, they catch a car. No,
is
it's
like
catching
cars.
Yeah. It's like a procession.
Yeah.
That comes past you. And also you have to get out, like obviously they're not going to run you over, but you have to get out of the way of the car because they're all driving in one line. So you have to get overtaken basically and move out. So scary.
Oh, I see. And it speeds up as well. So on Sunday, it starts at 14 kilometers an hour after 30 minutes. And it speeds up depending on how long you last up to 34 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, that's pretty fast. But I think that's just to make sure they catch people.
If you're still going at, about 3 hour mark, 3 hours 20 mark, I think they caught the last guy. And in London, we had 300 people there. And the guy who won it in London did, I think, 44 kilometers.
Yeah, 44, 45. 45 kilometers. So yeah, more than a marathon.
How long did you last, Andy?
Long enough. Long enough, Sarah.
Are you not revealing it?
I can't remember how much distance I did. Probably
I can't remember.
Some an hour and a half. Between an hour and a half.
Did you do that long? Well, that went by quick.
About 14K, something like that.
Oh, right. It's quite impressive.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Mo, you didn't get involved after running a marathon the week before?
I did not. No, I didn't. I went to see them, though. I did see Silly, Andy and Rick, and I gave them words of encouragement is what I did.
Very
nice. You're in a very unique position because you've also been the car.
Oh, yes, I have been the car.
Well, I've very smugly been the car. So we made a video on the running channel last year to kind of help support the cause and let people know about the Wings for Life World Run itself. And yeah, Sarah got to drive this most incredible 250 grand Range Rover, Land Rover that was kitted out.
That was also terrifying because I got in it having only in my life ever driven a VW Polo and a Ford Focus. And the guy was like, oh, so what's your experience of driving, trucks and vans? And I was like, zero, literally zero. First thing he said was like, if you turn the corner too sharply, this will roll. I don't think he really knew my personality type because I then drove the car at like 1 mile an hour. He had to eventually be like, you can go to second gear.
But you were there in this big car in the warmth with heated seats.
Yeah,
you were going to roll that one out. And then Mo and I were out there on the track at Goodwood, this was, in genuinely the worst weather I've ever run in my life.
Yeah, it was awful. You guys were soaked.
Yeah. Oh, and hail. I had to stop at one point because it hurt too much to move. But excellent segue. That was actually Mo's first ever video for the running channel.
Precisely.
So maybe we should give a little bit of context as to why you're here today and then let's get stuck in because this is what I really want to find out about. Mo has recently attempted to tick off one of your kind of bucket list running goals, which is to run a sub 3-hour marathon. We teamed up with Under Armour for that, so we'll come on to that a little bit later on. But basically, we wanted to talk to you and find out about that experience and how it went basically on the day.
So that was actually my last ever video for the Running Channel.
That's it, we're done now.
Took my goals off.
Done it.
No, it was such an incredible day. Like, honestly, I can't even put into words like how it felt to cross the line in the time that I did, but just cross the line in general after training for it for so long. It was a surreal experience. And then obviously seeing you, seeing everyone there was just wild.
Yeah, I took my son, one of my...
One of my sons.
Just did ip, dip, do.
Ip, dip, do. Yeah, that's how we do it at home. I took Sam and we were both on our bike cycling madly between these places. And he was so excited about it that literally for the next few days, whenever I took him to school or we bumped into other parents and they were like, oh, what did you do at the weekend, Sam? He's like, I watched Mo run a marathon. He was absolutely buzzing with it. So maybe we should rewind a few weeks before it and ask whether you thought it was possible. This sub 3 hours was always your goal.
To be honest, no, I didn't actually think I could do it because I mentioned it, like, it was like 5 weeks out or 6 weeks out and I was like, this goal is really hard. Like, I'm really taking on such a massive goal. And I kept getting reminded of my previous marathon time.
Which was?
3 minutes. Nice. 3 hours and 32 minutes. And it was like, I have to shave 32 minutes off of PB. And
wow.
Because was it hard as well? Because that previous time that you ran wasn't like an all out, after a training block either.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was literally because I just needed to run a marathon to feel like what the distance felt like. So I went by myself on a random Sunday morning.
I just needed to run one. Had to go out and run.
In Hyde Park, yeah.
It was lockdown, wasn't it?
It was in the middle of lockdown, yeah, precisely. And the only fuel I had was a bar of Snickers and Lucozade that my brother gave me about halfway through.
So going from that, which is like not optimal marathon prep or execution, to then going into something where you're going to have paces on the day, you've got a coach, you've got Under Armour backing you as well. Did it feel like a lot of pressure, or did it feel like, okay, actually half an hour is achievable because I've come from
a bit of both, everything? Honestly, I felt like an athlete, which isn't like a normal feeling to feel. I felt like Andy, I'm sure.
Yes,
like,
that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said on the podcast.
Athletes are available.
But it was like, I can finally like structure my training properly, have the right paces, have the right fueling strategy, have everything there for me. So it was like, it is such a massive goal for me, but it was within like sight. Once I ticked off the full 16 weeks of training, I'd gotten the coach, I'd gotten, tried the shoes on, and it was just like, all I needed to do was just go out and do it.
Was there any one particular session where you went from thinking like, oh, this is pretty fast, to like, oh, okay, maybe?
Probably the time I'd done marathon pace for a half marathon. Nice. And that just felt like, okay, cool, I just need to double this. So I was like, okay, cool, it's within reason.
And what would you say, we've spoken about this like off air, I suppose, how would you compare the structure of your training pre and post getting some coaching input, I guess, like what changed?
So don't wing it. If you're going for a big goal like this, do not wing your training.
Were you winging it?
I was winging it for quite a while. Like, ultimately I was like, as long as I get two track sessions in, two relatively long runs, and like a tempo session, I'll be fine.
And you weren't really thinking about what those sessions were, right? You were just joining with other people's stuff.
Whatever the session was given on the day, it was the one I'd do. And whatever people were like long running, I'd just join them for it. There was no like actual structure for it.
I did not
but
know.
But that's your style, mate. That is your style, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just, I mean, you know, turn up to a park if anyone's running, bring your beatbox and just run.
That's exactly
what it was. Literally Mr. Run Club. Like, if you go to a run club in London, most probably there.
I go to like every single one.
Yeah, what are you training for today, Mo? I don't know, 5K? What are you training for 2 days later? What are you training for today? This is a marathon session.
Yeah, no, it's literally, so it was a lot of wing sessions and a lot of like, I didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but I knew that the mileage was slowly building up. But whether the pace was, I couldn't tell you until...
Yeah, because you actually went through, so the day before the marathon, we put out a video on Instagram, I think, that had like your... accumulative mileage.
Wonderful.
I think we were just talking about this off mic. Cumulative or accumulative?
Yeah, probably cumulative.
Right into podcast@therunningchannel.com to make sure you sort our grammar out.
Yeah, there were some good English teachers that emailed him before.
Was there really?
Yeah. To varying degrees of disgust.
Okay, well, I'm really sorry.
Please be nice. Yeah, we were talking about your like cumulative mileage and you added it up from looking at all of your stats. Yeah. And like, there was the 5 weeks leading up to the marathon. Perfect. You were working with a coach. Amazing. Before that, some weeks it was like off the scale. The next week, like,
it was insane.
You were even looking at your phone going like, wow, what happened that week? Why did I run so much?
Yeah, it went from like 500 and 600 kilometers in January and February to like targeted, actually decent mileage where the training was, and I gave myself enough time to rest. And it was just, it kind of all narrowed, like funneled in my training to nail in exactly what I needed to do. And it paid off.
Yeah. And I think having someone that takes that pressure off you for kind of organizing your training is the thing that makes a massive difference. Always made a massive difference to me. You feel like, well, I'm doing the right thing because someone else is telling me what to do.
Yeah.
And then I don't want to put words in your mouth. I guess how much confidence did that give you ahead of actually doing the race, that like, oh, this person knows what they're doing?
It gave me all the confidence that I needed, because like, it took the pressure off knowing if I'm doing enough training for the day. It's like, Andy's such a great coach and he's done this before. So if he knows how to get me to a sub three, well, if anyone knew how to get me to a sub three, it'd be him.
Yeah.
So the fact that I just needed to do the sessions that he gave me meant that I didn't need to worry about whether it would be enough for the day or not, because I knew it would be.
It takes away that, I think, whether it's a coach who you can actually text and be like, is this going to be okay? Yeah. Or whether it's like a training plan or a coaching app, just having something where you're like, right, I've ticked this off, done. I think self-coaching, I don't know how some people do it to varying degrees of success, but I don't know how, because for me, there's always that element of like, oh, I feel okay. Should I go out and do another run? Or like, should I go to the gym? Or should I don't know. That I feel like your brain is always going to tell you to do more, especially when you know that the goal itself is so hard. Because that was one other thing I wanted to talk about as well. So out of your pacers or like your friends, you obviously supported loads of them the week before at London Marathon.
Yeah.
How many of them went for sub three and then narrowly missed it?
So I believe three of them were going for a sub three the week before.
So they did it at London, then you did yours at Milton Keynes Marathon, right?
Yeah, exactly. And all three of them are faster runners than me, or stronger than runners than me, and none of them got sub three. So a week out, my brain was going crazy.
Yeah, thinking, I spoke to you in between the two and you were like, that was the first time you'd gone, oh gosh, this is like...
I was like, okay, maybe it's a lot tougher than I thought it would be. Yeah. But and then again, the conditions in London weren't the greatest that day.
It was pretty wet.
Yeah.
So
and at the start as well, which is quite hard because then you're just soggy.
The elites run fast, but they have the advantage of having like they don't hang around on the start line for ages. They have kind of that hospitality to keep them warm and dry and people to take their kit and all that sort of stuff. And then they just get into it and then they're only out there for 2 hours. So
And also I feel like there's a massive mindset thing of like, you know that when you get to the end of a marathon, you're gonna have to like walk for a little bit or like go find your bag, whereas I'm guessing as well for an elite, they know that they're getting like a towel within 0.2 seconds and then are going to be like whisked away as well. I don't know whether that's just me. I'm always thinking about like how long before I can sit down. Depends
about
how fast
about
I
another
run.
Mile
it's really long. But then if you think about it, there are 50,000 people running, so it has to be
but on race day, let's talk through that, like, I suppose to give people extra context, do check out the video because it's really cool and gives you a real insight into the kind of emotion of the day. Mo had four pacers. We'd had Milton Keynes Marathon is a relay marathon as well. So you can run the whole distance or you can have a team of four people swapping in and doing it. So they'd given us permission to have people come onto the course and kind of basically pace you. So you had four pacers and you kind of specially chosen people that you trusted, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And actually the order in which I got them as well was like so important to me, but having the people there like to pace you just felt amazing, because I know initially we were going to go with just one person to pace me the whole way, and then we found out that we can relay, and it was I think it worked a little bit better, because ultimately I got a burst of fresh energy
every time you got a new pacer,
every new pacer, and they, you know, their form wouldn't break down over 10k, whereas over a marathon someone's form might break down. So it's like having just had to match their cadence and having them just speak to me the whole time, whereas I didn't have to like, well, if you watch the
you had
video,
a fresh hype man,
a fresh hype man
every 6 months.
Every single time.
I feel like as well, it was what, like 45 minutes that you were with each one, which like isn't really long enough to get annoyed at someone.
No,
like just as they're starting to grate on you slightly, you can be like, swap.
Yeah. Next. Yeah, well, I mean, that sounds like Sarah speaking from experience. So
yeah, Andy for a whole 10K.
Because I have paced Sarah before and you really don't like it, do you?
No. I do and I don't. It depends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the idea of like offloading the pace to someone, especially me being like super hypercritical of my own pace, it was difficult to do because like I have to just have to trust them to look after this marathon for me, and they did. But it was like I kind of wanted to check my watch like every 2 minutes just to see if I was still on track. I think that's good though.
Like you have to have that amount of trust as well. But like if you weren't wanting to check, then it shows. Then like you wouldn't care. You know what I mean? It shows that you care. One thing that was also really cool is that because it was a relay, the night before with all the paces, we were looking up what the relay winning time was.
Oh, yeah.
And we were so confident that they had a chance of winning, but they did not.
No,
there was a really, really fast relay team. So well done to whoever won that.
Next year though.
Yeah, next year.
Next year we'll be back.
So we've been lucky enough that this entire project's been supported by Under Armour. And actually we should talk about the shoes because a few months ago, I got to go out to Portugal to meet some of the team behind it, which actually included one of the people I used to train with way back in 2012. Shh, I know, that's a long time ago. But we're talking about the...
2012, when was that?
Millennia ago.
Well, 11.
Oh, wasn't that the last time you posted on Instagram?
Oh, yes, excellent segue. Don't forget to follow me at RunBadders. No, don't, actually, sorry. I keep forgetting whether I want
He's
people to or not.
He's confusing himself now, isn't he?
Please don't make me famous. Please
Yeah. I'm protesting too much. The shoes are right behind Mo, for anyone watching on the video. And they are the Flow Velocity Elite. So they were really late to the party with a, we love talking about super shoes, or I do, with a carbon plated racer. And I know that when we talked to you about this project, you were like a little bit nervous because you obviously hadn't had a chance to try them.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you find them, I guess?
I mean, I was definitely on the fence when you told me about it. It's like my biggest goal and you want me to put my trust in something that's just reached the market. But
yeah, I had tested them though. At least it wasn't a complete blind faith.
Yeah,
right? I was pretty confident. But
so of course, then you started giving me the facts of, you know, they've won New York Marathon and then you've run in them and you found them that like the faster you go, the easier it gets to run in them.
Yeah.
And when I put them on for the first time, I felt exactly the same. Like, I don't know if that was placebo because you'd instilled
I planted that seed, right? Yeah.
But genuinely, like they'd done the job. They got me over the line in sub 3 hours and I felt really, really good running in them. Obviously my pacers were running them as well. And I've only seen them running them since.
So they're still running them.
It's only been a week, but I've seen them running them since. So it's like the shoes definitely do the job. They do what they needed to do.
Nice.
And they're very fast shoes.
They also looked so cool on the day as well. Like I know that's not necessarily going to give
everything.
give you speed, but it was so cool. So I was out on a bike tracking you and every single time we like lost you or like you got hidden behind different groups, it was so easy to catch up with you because we were like just looking for that fluorescent green.
The brighter the shoes, the faster you go. It's
so
like
good.
Science.
Yeah, I always used to...
In that case, everyone will go fast. The starting line now at any race is just a who's who of super shoes. Literally, it's the colours on the start line I noticed at the weekend. Absolutely bonkers, aren't they?
They're so cool. I love it. So bright. So bright.
You definitely want to stand out. Fluorescent green did the job. So there's the shoes, but then sort of almost to rewind, like you did a vast majority or a large chunk of your training during Ramadan as well, like, and that blows my mind because of the you know, the time of the year and the type of training that you needed to do and the fact that you couldn't eat or drink during such a large chunk of the day.
I think that definitely gave me a bit more like motivation as well, knowing that I was able to hit the paces and distances without fuel. And then the fact that we pushed to Milton Keynes Marathon, which gave me like a week after Ramadan to properly carb load.
Yeah, because you had a plan to run London originally, right?
Yeah.
Like way back.
Yeah. And then when we pushed it, it was like, okay, beautiful. This gives me like an extra week because we didn't know if Ramadan was going to land on London Marathon or not.
Yeah.
Because obviously the moon and stuff. So it gave me a chance to know that I'd have enough recovery, enough rest and enough food leading up to the marathon, which ultimately gave me, you know, the winning hand. I think.
And it affects everything, mate, doesn't it? Because it also affects your sleep because you've got to get up to eat in the middle of the night.
Yeah, sleep was out the window. So I didn't actually go to sleep, then wake up to eat. I just stay awake. So the one time I would sleep would be like straight after eating in the middle of the night. And trying to sleep on a full stomach is not ideal.
And it's it must be really strange as well to get your head around the fact like, right, I'm not fueling to go to sleep. I'm fueling because when I wake up, I then can't eat for ages.
Exactly, yeah.
Did that mess with your body clock as well? Because the race itself at Milton Keynes was it a 10 a.m. start?
10 a.m. start,
And you'd had a week post-Ramadan to kind of reset, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you must have been trying to lie in a little bit in the morning.
Oh, it was a lot of caffeine that got me through that last week, to be fair. And then about 3 days out, you want to stop just so you're not dehydrated come race day. And then the morning of race was
your morning race was good. So good. Mo literally had everything measured out to precision, and we were in the hotel, and the best thing was that you went up to the hotel kitchen and was like, do you have a bigger bowl? Because he was making, bearing in mind, I'd already emailed the hotel to be like, hi, do you have a microwave so my friend can make some porridge? And they were like, yeah, we've got, like, they were so nice. They had loads of porridge available. Amazing. And Mo brought his own.
Microwave?
No.
I was going to.
I could 100%
see you traveling with a microwave.
You like turned up with your porridge measured out in a bag. Yep. Then you had like loads of powders as well, yeah, measured out in a bag.
They were good for it.
Okay, yeah. So the only performance enhancement for your race day was the shoes.
Was the shoes, precisely, yeah. And the energy drink. I had literally everything weighed out, even my water that goes into my porridge weighed out. So when I couldn't put it all in one bowl, it was like I'd lost. Because I had split into three different bowls and each one had to be like a certain level.
So we now understand how you broke the 3-hour mark.
Yeah.
This kind of attention to
specifics on everything. Yeah,
yeah. It's like a little science project in the morning.
Yeah. And you know, a week on, how do you feel about it now, reflecting back?
It honestly still one of the best running experiences like ever. And I took a nice little trip away to let legs recover, because I knew if I stayed in the UK, I'd probably try and run a bit sooner than I needed to. But I feel good. I feel recovered. I feel accomplished, and I'm just waiting to see what's next.
Yeah, well, he looks at me nervously.
Andy, being like, what are you going to make me do next?
A bigger bowl?
Yeah.
Two microwaves.
2 hours 45? Okay.
Well, I think though that we've talked about time and improvement and all that sort of stuff. Like, everyone that's listening out there will have their own goals, and we're here to support them, I guess, no matter what those goals are. But is there anything that you've learned in this process for yourself that you would be the one thing that you would kind of impart to people listening for their own goals? Doesn't matter what the time is or whether it's just to run a little bit further or more regularly. What would you say?
I'm going to be super cheesy and use our tagline, but ultimately, like, the night before, I said to myself, if I don't cross the line in 3 hours, then I would have improved, and I'm just going to go ahead and repeat. And that's like exactly what it is. Like, don't put so much pressure or like on yourself to achieve a specific time. Numbers are just like arbitrary ultimately, as long as you're going out there enjoying a run, you know, spending time with your loved ones.
I was going to pick up on, because for me the best part of that entire day was that when after the race it was hard to put the edit together, because when you cross the line, it looks like everyone's celebrating you straight away, but no one there knew your time. And I think that for me was the most like beautiful thing about the whole day, was that your mum, your friends, like your pacers, every single person, as soon as you cross that line, were like, you are the best person ever. Like, we're gonna hold you up.
It was just finished. Like, that was it. Yeah.
It didn't matter. Like, yes, we were all here to try and help you break sub-3, but ultimately, like, I think your mum said it at the end. She was like, I'm just proud that all of these people have come out here. That's my goal, to get a support crowd as cool as Mo's.
I'll bring mine to you.
Yeah, they were the most can I borrow it? Do you hire them out?
I mean, that'd be worth it. They were the most incredible hype team I've ever seen. But I think that's where we'll wrap it up. And if anyone out there, this segues nicely into the next section. I'm going to skip over the news this week, because I think Mo's was the only news that we all cared about. And then we'll go on to the best section, which is, not the best section today, but normally the best section, which is the questions from people at home. But please do email in to podcast@therunningchannel.com if you would like to know how to go about your goals, whatever they are in running. We'd love to help you out.
Don't forget, this episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite shoes. Now, at The Running Channel, we bang on all the time about how if you want to run fast, you need to run slow. I'm talking about the 80-20 rule.
Yes, you need to do the vast majority of your training at an easier or steadier pace. And you need an everyday pair of running shoes that you trust to do that. And the Infinite Elite has brand new cushioning technology in the form of Under Armour's Hover Plus. So that's designed to support you for the whole of even your longest runs with extra cushioning and energy return. So that's what this is all about.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.
Right then, let's kick off with some questions, shall we? Yeah. The first question today is from someone excitedly called Rick.
Why are excited?
Why don't people say when they email us, why don't they say where they're from? Like, where's Rick from? Do we know, Sarah? You're in charge of the inbox.
All right, everyone now, email podcast@therunningchannel.com and say where you're from. yeah. and give us a question. Well, are you happy now?
Rick sounds like he's from Milton Keynes. So Rick from Milton Keynes. If you're not from Milton Keynes, wherever you're from in the world, hi Rick. Anyway, emailed in to ask.
Did you literally just say Milton Keynes because that's where Mo ran a marathon?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like...
good geography, mate.
Do you remember those childhood word association games?
No.
Rick, Milton Keynes.
Rick's in denial.
We should do that with running one day.
What?
Like, you said... Okay, never mind. Never mind. I thought that was going to be a fun game. 3 days later.
Right. He asks... Does your warm-up routine change on race day? Do you warm up differently for a marathon run versus a 5K or a marathon? I think warm-up routines have changed so much recently because there's been so much contradictory advice about what we should be doing for warm-ups. If you went back 10 years ago, you'd see so many more people doing static stretching compared to now. Where are we going with this? Sarah, do you want to kick off?
Well, I'm
going to... It sounded like you didn't know where you were going.
Rick was like, I don't know where I'm going, so I'm going to hand over to me.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. I find watching what other people do, like watching elites warm up, so interesting because my thought process up until I started working at the Running Channel was if I'm running and I need to go fast, no matter what the distance is, I need to move as little as possible until the start line.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be able to run as fast as possible. However, this has been proven wrong recently on two counts. Number one, I was watching Philly Bowden on YouTube. Who's doing Copenhagen Marathon on the day that this podcast comes out or the day after. Nice. So best of luck to her. And she recently did a 5K like all out run. And that day, I think she did that run as part of a session and then did some miles after, but she did a 3 mile like shakeout on the day before that 5K run, which I found interesting.
Separate to the run or as the warm up?
Well, that's the same. That's
separate.
The same distance.
Yeah, but this is what I found interesting. So I think she did like a few miles as like warm up before the run, then did that big run. And then at the weekend, I had a long run to do and I finished it off by running park run. And I felt so good in the first kilometer of park run. Like I wasn't running PB pace.
Because you actually did a warm up.
Yeah, because
This is some big revelation on the Running Channel that we should do a warm up.
No, but I think, so when I think of warm ups, I think of doing like, not static stretches, but like dynamic stretches.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, I'm going to do walking lunges or feed the pigeons or whatever people don't call it who are in year nine pigeons. Hockey. Yeah. But like, I think of doing that, but actually, and if I was going to do a warm up, I'm always most likely to skip out there and then run for 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But actually the running to 5 to 10 minutes makes a huge difference when you start off because you haven't got any of that like stiffness going on.
I mean, that's I'd say like vital. If you can do it and you've got the time to do it, don't use the first K or mile of the run as the warm up. Yeah. Like, so I would have done a few minutes of activations. So kind of like the dynamic drills that you're talking about, but like low intensity ones. Then I would have done, when I was doing a training seriously, I'd have done a close to 5K warm up run. So like 4K at least. So 20 minutes of...
For what? Length of race.
So this is for any, well, I might have cut that down slightly for race, but I'm thinking about it as like any hard workout. So like a track workout, hills, threshold, any of those sort of things. I wouldn't do this whole warm-up thing for a long run on a Sunday. I'd have just done the kind of activations and then eased into my run.
So what for a 5K then compared to?
Yeah, if I was doing, I mean, I never raced a marathon, as we all know. So I'm going to come to Mo in a minute and find out about his warm-up. But for the shorter races that I did and any long workouts, bear in mind my workouts would have been 10K plus of volume. So it's the equivalent of warming up for a 10K race. I'd have done a few minutes of activations, 10 to 20 minutes of easy running. Then I'd have stopped because I'd have been changing my shoes to do a workout in a different pair of shoes or a race in a different pair of shoes. And then I'd have done some dynamic drills to kind of focus on the things, the activations were kind of starting a little bit, but my body was now... and my muscles are now warm enough to do some slightly more intense drills. So A skips, all the different types of skips into like increasingly dynamic, more powerful drills and then into strides. So like 4 times 100 meter strides. And then actually there's really good science behind something called VO2 kinetics. So if you're running a short race in particular, and I'm thinking a mile, 5K, if you do 200 meters or for me 30 seconds plus of effort at or slightly faster than the pace that you're going to run your race pace at. Last thing that you want to do, because it feels like it's going to make you tired. There's really good science behind that. Prepping your body, your VO2 kinetics, which is how fast your body responses to responds to working at its maximum capacity. To do that anywhere in the half an hour before actually racing.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry, I went off on a geeky tangent. But Mo, what did you do for your marathon?
I think the one changes if you're going to run a marathon compared to like a 5K. Ultimately, I don't want to add so much more mileage if I'm doing a marathon. But you would still do the dynamics. You would still try and get your body warm. That's exactly what you want to be doing. But I can't really remember. I just done like strides, like dynamic.
So for a 5K, would you be doing some running as a warm up?
I think so. If I'm going out for an all out 5K, I'd definitely add 2 to 5K of running pre that 5K.
Wow, that's a lot. I think a lot of people would be surprised by that. 2K warm up for a 5K race.
Yeah, but I think that's the right ballpark. Okay. And just to finish, I suppose, interestingly what Mo said there, he doesn't really remember what he did. I would say that's probably because you do a pretty similar warm up each time, and actually, my advice would be to practice it, and therefore, yes, do the same warm up on race day that you've done in training, so that you kind of
non-negotiable. I just do this every single time.
Well, and it's subconscious then as well. You're going through the routine; it helps you settle into any or get rid of any nerves and things like that.
Like I remember on race day that was one of the things you like handed over to the pacers as well, and they were just like, "Right, come on, Mo, we're warming up now." You're like, "Okay, off
just
we go."
Remove all of the necessity to think.
Yeah.
Okay, super. Next question comes from Stephen. We've no idea where he's from. Stephen says, if I'm going to choose shoes for marathon race day, I know the rule is nothing new on race day, but how far in advance and how much practice should be put into new shoes? Should I put 100 kilometers on them before a race or just one or two long runs? What's your advice for the best practice with shoes? This is an intriguing question because 100 kilometers sounds like an awful lot to me. So how many kilometers should you be able to get out of a pair of shoes?
That's totally different depending on your body type, the way that you run and the shoes that we're talking about. So that's an impossible question probably, but definitely more than 100 kilometers.
When they look a bit knackered.
If you are starting to get niggles and you don't normally, then that's a really good sign. But yeah, if the grip's worn through, if you've got holes in them, if like you're collapsing inwards when you're running.
Super shoes are more likely to have less mileage in them than like your everyday trainers or your easy mileage.
Right. For sure. Mm-hmm. I'd say what you're trying to avoid is blisters mainly.
Yeah.
And knowing that. So you can probably take more of a risk with a brand new pair of a pair of shoes that you know suit your mechanics. There's probably two different questions here. So if you just bought a brand new pair of shoes that you've worn out, then you probably don't need to wear them in as much if you're confident that they're going to give you the support and not give you any kind of mechanical issues. So really you're just breaking them in potentially to make sure you don't get blisters spots or anything like that.
Okay. So it's actually,
you wouldn't need to do 100 kilometers.
Yeah, you could just do a few miles in them as long as they fit your feet and it all works really well.
Yeah. But if you're taking a gamble on a pair of shoes that you've never worn before, then something like 50 to 100 kilometers is probably pretty sensible to make sure that you're not having any issues and that those shoes are going to do you a positive service on race day. But then you don't want to go too far in them because then you're starting to degrade the foam and then all of the stuff that you've bought them for is going to be less effective.
One thing I'd say as well is that if you are testing like a brand new pair of shoes and you're in a marathon training block, there is nothing more gutting than heading out on a long run in a fresh pair of shoes and having to cut it short because they're not working. So like always do a test in a very short distance.
Yeah, build up to that.
Or even like if you're doing track workouts every week, break in the new pair of shoes as your track warm up and then swap out to double check that they work for you and then practice your long run in them.
Yeah. I've also got a little bit of a cheat on this because obviously we get a few shoes every now and again. So there's actually a website called runrepeat.com.
Yeah.
And where basically you put in the type of shoe that you've got now that works with your feet really well and they match it to other shoes. So actually wearing them in, you wouldn't need as long because you'd be buying a very similar shoe.
Yeah, this is one thing that actually loads of shops have started doing now. So back in the day, shops used to categorize running shoes by brand and they now categorize by like type because it's far more of like carbon shoes, everyday shoes.
Yeah, a proper like expert in a local running store would be amazing. You'd be like, I really liked these shoes a few years ago. They don't really exist anymore. What could I run in now? And they might actually say to you, totally different brand, they might come back with like, well, these actually will feel similar. Yeah, they've changed running shoes have changed so fundamentally in the last 3 or 4 years that if you do have an older pair of shoes, then it'd be quite overwhelming right now. So any tool that helps with that is a positive thing.
Yeah.
Or you can do the classic, go on to a secondhand online retailer and just buy 10 pairs before the update comes out. I know people have done that.
Like ones that where they've got like you know, they're like half price or 60% off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stockpile.
Yes, exactly.
And recycling your trainers is a whole other podcast coming to you soon.
We've said that different shoes will last different people for different amounts of time, but there is still life in those shoes, just potentially not at the performance end, and they could help from a charity perspective. So
you can also turn them into kids' playgrounds. That's what you can do.
Yeah, you can. And running tracks.
And running tracks.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
But anyway, before we go off on a tangent, you have been listening to the Running Channel podcast with Rick, me, Mo, Andy. We're doing this at the end now. Yeah. Thanks so much, Mo, for coming in and joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. And we will see you next time.
Yeah, if we can fit any more chairs in.
Oh my gosh, should we just add one extra person each week?
Who should we get next week?
Email him.
Yeah. Maybe Kirsty from Location, Location, Location will turn up.
This episode was brought to you by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which has a focus on both comfort and endurance. So an ultra springy, responsive feel that protects your legs and keeps them feeling fresh, which is what Jess has been putting to the test as she's been training for over the last 12 weeks for taking on her ultimate ever 10K. And she's been focused on consistency. So being able to show up with those fresh legs every day and every week in order to put in the work and the recovery that she needs to do to run her best.
If you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.